Well, looky here, looky here. It's another fantastic episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com. I'm your host, Amelia Dalton. And it's time, my friends, to get out your electron microscopes, because we're going deep. Down deep to the building blocks of electronic design. The very materials themselves. My guest today is Chris Kramer, CEO of Intermolecular. Chris and I, fully equipped with atmospheric diving suits, will be prepared for the depths of new material development. And we're taking you with us. So, let's go. Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello.
So, Chris, we keep hearing that new materials are key to unlocking future innovations in almost every industry these days. What are some of the challenges and opportunities to bringing these new materials into mainstream use?
Yes, advanced materials are at the core of innovation in the 21st century for a wide range of industries, including semiconductors, where I have most of my experience. But if you think of consumer electronics, automotive, aerospace, just about any industry has a challenge with materials. The companies that can successfully implement or change materials early on are typically the most successful. The challenge is that changing materials is often difficult because it's a whole new process, it's a whole new set of challenges, and it's complex, slow, and costly to change these materials. So often companies do change materials, but only, you know, at the point of gun where it's no other result. The more innovative companies realize that material changes are actually a competitive advantage and target their R&D capabilities to be able to explore and capture and analyze and then implement new materials into their manufacturing.
So, Chris, my audience may not know the name Intermolecular. So what do you guys do and how do you play into helping speed the discovery and characterization of new material development?
Great question. So Intermolecular, or IMI as we often refer to ourselves, we're a company about 10 years old. We focus on the development and the exploration of new materials. You can think of us in a very simple way as an extension of other companies' R&D capabilities. So we have a core technology that we use with our tool set here in San Jose, California. Some very clever engineers and scientists that work towards exploring and addressing these material challenges in advance of the need of certain customers. Then, of course, we can work with specific customers to address specific problems. The advantage we bring in, very simply, is we are faster. We can do more experiments more quickly with our techniques. We are safer in that we provide an environment with some of these materials are toxic. Some of these materials are experimental. You wouldn't want to bring them into your manufacturing facility. We can do that early. And the third is that we have experience, so we can add learning and accelerate a company's ability to use new materials in their manufacturing.
So, what specific challenges do your customers face in the materials discovery process? And how does IMI help them overcome these challenges?
In a variety of ways, Amelia. One of the things that Intermolecular does that very, very well, in addition to having the ability to put down or deposit these advanced films, is to characterize these films, provide the learning behind what these films do and sometimes what they can't do. That's a very important feature. Sometimes just the ability to scan from, let's say, 12 candidates down to two or one is a very important and valuable proposition for a company looking at the wide breadth of possibilities when you talk about new materials, because the entire periodic chart becomes in play for possible materials. So we can take the ability to take complex, multivariable, hard to acquire, hard to analyze materials and provide a program or system where we can deposit these films, we can characterize these films, and then provide information that is actionable. And if we can help our partners make an informed decision, it becomes a better way for them to then proceed in their own R&D capabilities.
So, Chris, can you talk about some of the innovations that new materials will be able to enable in the future?
Well, you know, I'm probably not the best guy to do that, but it's actually as a person who has a family and is involved in all sorts of aspects of life, you can just see what touches yourself as a consumer. So as a consumer, I'm always interested in what's the best possible electronic device, whether it's a smartphone or it's a PC. So you talk about the speed of the processor. You talk about battery life. You talk about the ability to run multiple tasks simultaneously. Then if you were to transition to other technologies outside of semi, such as glass, the ability to help glass makers provide specialized coatings that will make the glass or the building more thermally stable. And save energy is an important aspect of what we do. You could transition all the way over to alloys manufacturers, and with Intermolecular, we're able to help alloy manufacturers look at different compositions of materials, experiment quickly, rule things in, rule things out, and this potentially would lead to lighter cars, better fuel efficiency. Go over to aerospace. The coatings that we experiment with potentially become the coatings on different aspects of machinery that would make them either less likely to corrode or less friction, again, improving the efficiency of whatever they're used in. And that's just a quick sample of different areas that materials revolution in the 21st century is going to touch people and companies and will be a significant part of the way you and I live.
Okay, Chris, so let's talk about the interaction between process tools and new materials. Can you talk about that interaction and how we can achieve new levels of performance?
Thank you. Great question. And actually, this one plays very well to my background. I've been in the semiconductor industry for over 25 years, spent most of my time with the process tool side of the house, capital equipment, but the last 8 years have been in materials. And what I have seen in those 25 plus years is a decided and subtle shift towards the performance coming from the materials and the equipment. It used to be you could scale and better equipment every couple of years generation would provide greater performance. Now it's almost impossible if you talk about performance on the wafer to disaggregate the tool from the materials. They have a combined effect. So the advantage, or I should say the benefit that Intermolecular plays, is that we're able to work with three constituencies within the ecosystem. We can use with the end user or the device maker. We can work with the process tool manufacturer. And we can work with the material supplier themselves. Each one of those three players has a role in the ultimate performance of the device, yet they bring in different capabilities. Intermolecular has the ability to provide learning for an informed decision for either one of those players and any combination of those players. So we find ourselves in programs where we're working with one party, sometimes two parties, to solve the same objective. The benefit being we can do it faster together, it's more cost effective together, and the end result is often better accepted because we've run through all of the potential challenges and have solved the problem together.
All right, Chris, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, we were talking earlier about sailboat racing. So where do you like to race your sailboat? And you moved to the Bay Area recently, right?
That's correct. Just moved to the Bay Area, and it has to be, don't tell my boss because I want to have my weekends free for sailing, but it has to be one of the nicest areas in the world to sail and to race. So I'm coming from Long Island Sound, which is a very nice place as well, but there's certainly more breeze here on the West Coast. So when the boat finally shows up and I'm ready to start racing, I'm looking forward to spending some quality time out on the water with my family and friends.
Excellent. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Chris.
Thank you.
Speaking of new material discovery, let's do a little news you may have missed, okay? 3D printing edition. Have you heard the word metamaterial? Okay, let's take a little step back here. As we all know, 3D printed material is generally rigid, right? Not a lot of bend to it. But what if you could bend 3D material and make it into a machine without any other external parts? Yes. What I am talking about here is some super cool, crazy new material developed at the Hasso-Plattner Institute in Germany. These crazy cats have found a way to make simple, non-powered, moving machines from only 3D printed material. And they're calling it, you guessed it, metamaterial. Okay, so the key here is what is referred to as shearing cells. Okay, so now, in most 3D printed stuff, the actual cells of the material itself are rigid. But this metamaterial is different. With the precise placement of these shearing cells, this 3D printed material can be bent and twisted. Now, going even further down, within these shearing cells is a honeycomb-like structure. And when that internal structure is pushed or squeezed or turned, the cells of the honeycomb deform or shear, which allows that 3D thing, whatever it is, to change in some way. Maybe latch, hinge, twist, like in a knob? Huh. Okay, so where does the machine part of this play into it? Well, this team of researchers at the Hasso-Plattner Institute claim that their metamaterial and the objects made from it can transform input forces and movement into a desired set of output forces and movement. Ergo, machines. Interesting. I've included a couple links on this week's Fish Fryin' page on EE Journal that go into further detail about metamaterial if you're interested. But you should definitely check out the video, at least, of this material in action. It's super cool. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. We also have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal, chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com. Or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of September 23rd, 2016, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.